Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Seems like a simple solution. Welcome. Happy Friday. Busy Friday. Dick Girardi joins us today. Talking about the Belmont Stakes. And Brandon Lee Gowton, Bleeding Green Nation, on the Carson Wentz contract extension. Eagles are an organization that takes care of their key players.
Yeah, with that move, Carson Wentz, I believe he is now, when you take the highest salaries of all NFL players for 2019, I believe number four now. So he's right around $32 million. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Too bad you weren't recording the after show yesterday.
Got a little funny. Well, for you and me, it was kind of funny.
Well, yeah, it was a ride for you and me.
Yes.
Guess who just came out of the field position in the basement from 2 weeks ago? All right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but you equipped him with some information that could lead to something tomorrow, depending on the outcome of the Belmont. So we'll see.
I did. I did give him some.
You certainly did. So you know, so by 7 o'clock tomorrow night, it's on him.
We'll hear from Mr. Girardi in the next hour.
Yeah.
Bob Grove this half hour on the Stanley Cup. Was that an awful call or no call or what last night? Everyone talks about the Saints-Rams no call and the pass interference and the head-to-head contact. But that still led to a field goal. The Bruins thought they're going on the power play. No. The player's down. So now St. Louis, even though their even strength is essentially on a power play, and they scored. That's worse. The officiating in the Stanley Cup playoffs has not been very good. Just like the officiating in the NFL playoffs, for the most part, was not very good. It's like the officiating in the NBA playoffs has been eh. But you know what? Sports are hard to officiate. They're hard to do. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, Beverage Supermarket. I mentioned the Father's Day gift card. I know you liked the idea, didn't you? Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Speaking of second to none, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, at Brewers Outlet, Lion's Head and Lion's Head Light 24-pack cans, just $8.99. Really? That's the special through Tuesday. We'll come back. Bob Grove on the Stanley Cup Final. The Blues are on the doorstep of their first ever title on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstores, ready for all of your warm weather activities. Camping, picnics, grilling, visit Brewers Outlet first for microbrews, imports, domestic specialties. They got them. Grab some pickles at the Pickle Bar, Steve Jones's favorite place. Snacks, Brewers Outlet has that covered. Soda, sports drinks, check. Weekly specials, too. And there's lots of convenient parking. So get all the refreshments everyone will love for your next outdoor gathering at Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstore, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Phillies are back home. They'll play tonight. But by the way, Dallas Keuchel has signed his contract with the Braves, so that affects the Phillies because that puts them in the division. That doesn't mean he's going to be awesome, incredible, or great, but as you know, you try to do things on shows such as these where you're trying to let people know ahead of time what, you know, so you're not surprised by something. Hey, they're going to change the basketball rules this year. Keuchel and Kimbrel won't sign contracts until after the draft. Here's why. No compensation. Kimbrel signed with the Cubs this week. Keuchel signed with the Braves. So you try to keep everybody up to date on everything. Bruce has been a great addition for the Phillies so far. He's played very well. And we'll see what Adam Haseley does. He's off to a good start. By the way, the New York Penn League does begin a week from tonight. State College will play at Williamsport a week from tonight. Let's see.
Back to Bowman you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By the way, Keuchel's career ERA versus all National League East teams, 2.55.
Mm-hmm.
So, not, yeah, too sure.
Speaking of the New York Penn League, I remember when you pitched against the Spikes. So... former assistant coach at Oklahoma State and the University of South Carolina has been sentenced to 3 months in prison for accepting bribes to link top players with bribe-paying managers and financial advisors. Lamont Evans said it's one of the saddest days of his life. He lost a $600,000 job, and the likelihood he'd eventually become a head coach with his September 2017 arrest. At the time, he was at Oklahoma State. His guilty plea in January to bribery conspiracy could lead to his deportation from the country where he has lived since the age of two. Evans was charged in a case that revealed the role of corrupt coaches in a scheme to steer NBA-bound youngsters to schools or managers. So this is what they've been doing. They've been going through the sentencing phases one by one with these guys. And then it's a 3 month sentence. I do not know where Lamont Evans is from. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I'm talking about deportation. He's been here since the age of two. But I mean, deportation over this? Let's see. The other assistant, by the way. From the University of Arizona, Book Richardson apologized to players he coached at Arizona, saying, "I let them down." He was also sentenced to 3 months in prison and 2 years of probation for his role in the scandal. He's 46. He pled guilty earlier this year to accepting $20,000 in bribes from Christian Dawkins. Of course, when this all happened, everybody was talking about multiple years in jail. They're getting months, 3 months. Then there's Tony Bland. Well, Tony Bland didn't get anything. He avoided prison after his plea deal. Bland was sentenced to 100 hours of community service and 2 years probation. who said the debate over whether college players should be paid plays no role in the way I thought about this case. That was the judge. To be honest with you, there's a lot of crime out there of people who deserve prison time. To me, this is the one here where Bland gets, what, 100 hours of community service? And, let's see, 100 hours of community service and, what, 2 years probation? Sound right? Bing, 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 bing. To me, that seems like a fair sentence for him. I think it would be a fair sentence for all of them. In the world, I mean, bribery's wrong. All right, so don't get me wrong here. But here's where they lose out. None of these guys are ever going to hold jobs coaching college again. None of them are. You know, maybe they have a connection. Maybe they can get somewhere in the NBA, whatever, G League, something like that. But the likelihood that they'll get another job like this, like they had, very small. Because the NCAA will, at some point, I would think, would slap a show cause on them, which will knock them out of the game. And I just think that that is the community service part. I mean, because to me, they're going to suffer financially enough anyway. They're not going to be able to coach in the collegiate level anyway. Now, they might be able to coach in the G League or something like that, or Europe, whatever, but not like it used to be in their lives. That's why the prison thing, that's to me a little overkill in this. Yeah. But they committed crimes, but there are bigger crimes out there. All right, Bob Grove, always one of our favorites. Let's get into the Stanley Cup Final with him. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Steve. We are, absolutely.
It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be on.
You were the one that said, hey, St. Louis, they're going to be, they're going to play the Bruins tough. I want to start with Ryan O'Reilly. He has been able to get the key goals at the key moments for St. Louis in this series. What has made Ryan O'Reilly a better and better pro as time has gone?
Well, first of all, he had a spectacular game four, and then, of course, came through with another great game last night. And one of the things that's, he was very honest about his time in Buffalo. He had lost some enthusiasm for the game, and that happens when you're in a losing environment.
Yeah.
And he got out of there, and he gets in a place in St. Louis where, quite frankly, if you go back to December, right, it wasn't any better. It wasn't much better.
Right. No, they had, what, 34 points in January.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we've seen from him is he's rediscovered it. You know, and it's not just this year, but I think when he left Buffalo, it was hard. It was hard for me. He was honest about it. And I get that. So I think he's rediscovered a little passion for the game. And you know, this is a guy who, look, he's one of the best. He's arguably the best, but on anyone's list, one of the best face-off men in the league.
Yeah.
And last night, at one point in the third period, was 17-4 in the circle, and of course, he was taking all the late draws for the Blues. So he's rounded out his game. He's always been capable of having. He's got great skills. He's very highly skilled. So he can make plays. He can finish plays. But he's made himself into an indispensable guy in the circle. And he's just he's a guy who I said is just playing with a different level of passion, I think, right now.
The no call in the third period led essentially to a 20-second power play because it was essentially 5-on-4. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the no call?
It was brutally bad. I mean, that's what I think of it.
I totally agree with you. Totally
terrible.
Agree with you. I thought that was the equivalent of the Saints and Rams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just inexcusable. Like, I had no... Kelly Sutherland was the referee, and I mean, you know, I think we have most people, and I certainly put myself in this camp, I have a healthy respect for the officials.
Absolutely.
And how difficult their job is. So I'm not going to just trash him and trash them all. I'm going to say they're generally, I think they're very, very good. But to miss, look, this year, Steve, the 2019 playoffs have been a nightmare for officials.
I agree.
And the league. And this is just the latest. And we've had a couple of these now. I can't even begin to guess why he didn't make that call. I really can't. It was such an obvious call. The Bruins let up. The Bruins let up, and they let in a goal, you know, moments later. And it turns out to be, you know, the goal that sinks them in the critical game five. But, I mean, it's not only the mistakes are happening, Steve. It's when they're happening. So
right.
If you go back and think about it, the Landeskog offside call, which actually they got right, but they had to have a long review and on the offside issue. That was at game seven.
Yep.
The Cody Eakins hit on Pavelski,
yeah.
Game seven.
Seven.
And this is Timo Meier hand pass. That won the game for San Jose in
That's
overtime.
Right.
And this is game five, and I don't need to tell you how critical. When a series is 2-2, the team that wins game five, it doesn't matter what the series is, almost always, about 80% generally,
yeah.
goes on to win the series.
Yes.
So it's really, really bad.
Yeah, and the difference between this and the Saints and Rams thing is that the Saints still had opportunity. It didn't determine... Right. I mean, this time it was there was a goal, 25 seconds after it happened. And as I said, they were essentially playing at that point 5-on-4 because
yeah,
he was still down on the ice.
No, right. No, exactly. And the Bruins had time to turn it around. So here's what they have to do. Pretty easy, Steve, for me. Let's go back to the series between. Let's go back to when the Blues were on the bad end of this.
Yeah.
Meier hand pass. Okay, that goal puts the Blues down 2-1 in the series.
Right.
And as we talked about, Craig Berube told his players, get over it right now.
Yep.
And just think about, and guess what? They never lost again.
Right.
So the Bruins still have two games left to play, and so now it's their turn. Okay, they can, I know why they feel aggrieved by this whole thing. But can they do what the Blues did? Can they put it behind them, forget about it, and go on and win two hockey games and win the cup? So if they don't do it, people in Boston are going to say this cost them a cup, and that, for me, is only partially would
right.
be true if they, in fact, don't win it.
Well, obviously, you know, the number of times Jack Hamm and I have talked about situations, the mentality he's always told me that the Steelers always had was there'd be an awful call, go to the next play. Right, bump, go to the next game. That's the way they always, he said, that's the way they always were. They just went to the next one, even if it was a bad call.
No, that's absolutely right. That's how the best of the pros handle it. You can't change it anymore. Phil Bork used to say on our broadcasts all the time, hey, sometimes you have to beat the other team and the officials.
Right.
But you just do what you have to do. It's still all in front of the Bruins. And no one's saying it's easy. No one's saying it's right. But it's possible. So can they get their minds around that, and can they get it done in St. Louis, where that place is going to be nuts?
Binnington was removed after giving up a boatload of goals in Game 3. And then Craig Berube came back to him, and he's been outstanding Games 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes how important is it for a coach just to read it and say, hey, look, it's all right. Just sit down. You're still our guy.
Oh, well, goalies will tell you that, you know, there's a lot to be said for coaches who understand how goalies take being yanked from a game.
Yep.
And while Binnington had struggled in a few games and had always done well coming back after a loss, I believe that was the first time this season he was actually yanked
right.
out of a game. So you might say to yourself, well, it's no big deal. It was obvious. I mean, it was obvious when he did it. He probably could have even done it earlier than he did it. That needed to be done. That game was over and done with, and Binnington wasn't good. When it's the first time you've ever yanked a young goalie, and he's never had that happen to him in the NHL, that's a little bit of a different layer of thinking a coach has to go through. And so for me, the trust in the relationship between the goalie and the coach will overcome all that stuff. And so he read into it and said he'll be fine, and he was absolutely right. Binnington last night was a guy who basically won in the game the way he played, you know, early.
No question. He was outstanding. St. Louis has been the team that's had the longer periods of time where they've been swarming and the Bruins have not been able to get guys off the ice. What has it meant to the St. Louis attack that the defensemen have been so active and have not been that concerned? In other words, we're just going to keep going forward. The defensemen keep attacking. What has that meant?
Well, first of all, those guys are good. Right? You think about Bortuzzo, and you think about Parayko, and you think about those guys in Bomeister, and so they can win along a lot of battles along the wall with their size once they've committed to make. So it's meant a lot to them, and it's enabled that forecheck game to have a whole different level. But here's what makes it able for them to do it. It's not just that those guys are committed and then winning battles or keeping pucks in. It's that they know if they get caught, somebody will be back to cover for
them. That's right. Huge.
And so that's defensive structure is what that is. And, you know, like this is one of the things that hurt the Penguins at times is guys would make that mistake, and guess what? The guy who's supposed to be covering your butt isn't there.
Right. Exactly. It's obvious what St. Louis has to do in Game 6 at home. The couple will be in the building. The couple is going to be in the building anyway. But now they have a chance to win it. What do the Bruins have to do to make this a Game 7 and give it one more shot?
Well, number one, they better find a way to get the top line back engaged because it's not happening. And it was a little bit unfair last night to Pastrnak because he was double shifting a lot.
Yes.
Because they used seven defensemen. And
they only had 11 forwards last night.
Right, and so he was the guy who ended up seeing, you know, time on a couple of different lines. And I thought it wore on him a little bit as the game went on, which is going to happen to most players. So they better get, you know, he and Bergeron and Marchand. Marchand, for me, has really not had a very good series at all.
No, he has not.
And they're not going to win the Cup without those guys. Now, there's been a lot of focus, as there was, on the Krejci line. They haven't been good either. So my question to the Bruins is, where are the stars? Their power play, which has been absolutely dominant, has kind of dried up right now.
Yep.
And that happens. So going into Game 6, they better find their power play. They better find one or two of their stars better find a way to start showing up on the score sheet. And the other one is a big decision that the coach has to make. Cassidy, is he going to play Chara? I mean, Chara went from 22 minutes to 16, and, you know, full marks for him for playing with a broken jaw. I mean, I guess, you know, the feeling is he must have had surgery, you know, between. I don't know. But he played less. I didn't think he was effective. And are you really going to play seven again on D? Can you really afford to do that? Can you afford to not have Backes in the lineup with as big and bruising as the Blues are? So there's a big decision there to be made for Cassidy going into the game. But, yeah, they better find the power play, and some of their stars better show up.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, you got to look over at Char and say, look, you got to give us 25, 26 minutes here. You're just going to have to. If not, we got to go someplace else because you got to go with 12 forwards, and Backes has to be one of them because he's an experienced hand that makes a big difference.
And he can play physically against a physical team. But here's the challenge for Char is, like, number one, they haven't playing with that full shield on is not easy. And we saw him early in the game, I thought. He lost a couple pucks in his skates, which is what happens. And here's the other thing, Steve. He can't talk.
That's
he
right.
He can't communicate on the ice.
That's a good point.
That's a huge, huge thing to try and overcome as a player. I mean, it's, you know, I just feel like, I mean, I somewhat feel like they rushed him back into that. Like, I don't know. I think it's a decision they got to make.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate always, Bob, from you.
I always appreciate getting on with you, Steve. Thanks.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're at the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by Brandon Gowden. Long time, Brandon. Too long. Great to have you with us from BleedingGreenNation.com.
It's been too long. I'm glad to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back. So Carson Wentz is the big story, signing the long-term extension. What did it take to get this particular deal done, and how important was the timing?
I think it's very important in terms of the timing to address that part first, because this really was the off season for the Eagles to do this deal. You know, it was the first one where they could actually extend Carson Wentz's contract, and I think they had every reason to give him this extension because they were already full in on him as their franchise quarterback. And if they were to wait, you know, the price tag's only going to go up, and I think for them to get it done, it's a big win for them. And for Carson Wentz, you know, I think he had motivation to potentially wait and try to see if his value could get even higher if he played well in 2019 and he stayed healthy. But he also had to acknowledge that the risk was there that he could get hurt again. So ultimately, he had that strong offer in front of him, and he took it. And I think that's a fair decision for him to make.
Based on the position on the field, that number can be big, really big. And it also can cost cap space. No team has won a Super Bowl ever that has had a quarterback take up 12% of the cap or more. How cap-friendly is the Wentz deal?
Yeah, so we haven't seen the full structure in terms of what money is in what year yet, but we obviously do know the new money. So beyond these first 2 years that he already had on his deal, is going to average $32 million. Now, when it comes to the cap, I think you have to acknowledge that Howie Roseman has been one of the best executives in the league when it comes to managing this. You know, it's never really been a huge problem for the Eagles. Now, he's also never had to deal with a franchise quarterback contract this big. So it is a new challenge for him in this regard. But obviously, this isn't something that caught the Eagles off guard. They've been planning for this Carson Wentz extension. This is something they've had to think about and plan around it when it comes to building this team. And there's no denying that it presents a challenge, just because, again, as you said, it takes up such a large portion of the cap. But when it comes to Howie Roseman and that front office, I think you have to give them some benefit of the doubt when it comes to figuring this stuff out and being able to field a competitive roster. When you look at the talent the Eagles have on their team right now, you know, it's one of the most talented rosters in the league still. So you have to feel good about that. And they also have a number of core players locked up for years to come. So there's a lot of pieces here. It's hardly like the cupboard is bare moving forward.
No, it's not. I believe Stefan Wisniewski re-signed?
Yes.
Okay. How did you look at that re-signing?
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting to me because originally, you know, he was under contract for the 2019 season, but the Eagles actually decided to decline his option and let him test free agency. And Wisniewski did go into free agency. He ultimately didn't find the deal that he liked, obviously, because he would have signed somewhere else. There was some talk that the New York Jets were interested in him, but nothing really panned out. And I think Wisniewski wanted a starting job. He was pretty adamant that he felt like he wasn't benched last year due to performance reasons. But ultimately, I guess he figured out that there wasn't really a market for him, and his best option would be to come back to Philly, where he can potentially fill in if someone gets hurt. The Eagles have Brandon Brooks, their Pro Bowl starting guard, who might not necessarily be ready for week one as he comes off an Achilles injury. So Wisniewski could potentially start a couple games early into the season before heading back to the bench. Or, you know, if there's another injury to either Jason Kelce or Isaac Simalo, Steven Wisniewski would be one of the first players up. So he comes back to a system he's familiar with. And although he probably won't be a full-time starter, there is potential for him to play if there's an injury.
We haven't had a chance to actually go over a few things. What do you think of the Miles Sanders pick?
I like the Miles Sanders pick. The Eagles have a clear need for a running back, and they traded for Jordan Howard, but Jordan Howard is only on a one-year deal. And Jordan Howard, while he's obviously had success in the NFL, his yards per carry have dropped every year. He's not a guy who's shifty out in space and a guy who really kind of makes plays with the ball in his hands. He's more of a, you know, hard-nosed runner, between the tackles kind of guy, red zone guy. So Jordan Howard's going to have a role in this offense, and I think he's, at least to start the season, he's going to be a big part of the offense. But Miles Sanders has a chance to kind of take his carries away as the season progresses if Miles Sanders can prove that he is trustworthy in pass protection and he works on his fumbling issues. So potential is there for Miles Sanders. He hasn't actually practiced yet with the Eagles as he's kind of dealing with some kind of hamstring issue. So it would be great to see him get back on the field soon and kind of flash that potential that I think he has. But in the meantime, he kind of just has to prove himself.
Overall, what did you think of the Eagles? Let's do this in combination. There's always the combination of free agency and how it's handled. You mentioned Jordan Howard. And then the draft. Do you feel like the Eagles handled both parts well enough where they're a better team now because of it?
I think they made a lot of key additions this offseason. Like you said, they added Jordan Howard. They added Miles Sanders. Training for DeSean Jackson was huge. This team needed a playmaker, someone who could really, you know, give them a deep threat, and that's exactly what he is. He led the NFL in yards per reception last year, so even though he's going to be 33 this season, he still has that ability to beat teams deep. So I think they made some pretty key offensive additions here. Now, one thing that I would say kind of concerns me is Chris Long retired, and the Eagles also did trade away Michael Bennett to the Patriots. So, you know, a pass rush unit that was pretty vital to the team's success over these past couple of seasons, especially when they won the Super Bowl, is weaker, I feel like, on paper at least, than it used to be. So that's kind of one spot where you'll still have some question marks. I mean, they're really counting on Brandon Graham to bounce back after he only had 4.5 sacks last season. He was playing through an ankle injury. They brought Vinnie Curry back. He only had a couple sacks last year. The Buccaneers also playing with an injury. And then they have 2017 first-round pick Derek Barnett, who they feel very confident in, but he's obviously not an established player in the NFL. The potential is there, but he still kind of has to prove himself. So the Eagles are kind of putting a lot of stock into what they already have at the defensive end position and hoping that works out. I just kind of wonder, is it going to be enough for them?
That's the interesting question. And in the division, let's go in the division. Who do you think improved themselves the most in the division where they're a bigger threat to the Eagles now because they did?
That's a good question, because I don't think necessarily the most improved team might not actually be the biggest threat. I would say Dallas. The Dallas Cowboys are still the biggest threat to the Eagles. I mean, they obviously won the division last year, and they beat the Eagles twice in their two games against the Eagles. But I don't necessarily think they're most improved. They didn't really do a lot this offseason to add to what they have. I think if you're looking for improvement, you could be looking at Washington. You know, they bring in Dwayne Haskins. He's a rookie quarterback, but And who knows what you get out of him in year one, but I just think there's more hope there than there was with Alex Smith, who we kind of know is a middling quarterback and was obviously injured anyway and not going to play at all this year. And otherwise, they just had Case Keenum or Colt McCoy. So if Haskins can kind of be this player who lives up to potential, that could be something interesting there. And just some of the other additions they made in the draft, too. I think they drafted well. They added some pieces. I don't think they're going to be a great team by any means, but I do think they could kind of be a nuisance, kind of maybe steal a game from the Eagles this year and kind of end up as a 6-10 team or a 7-9 team.
Is there a team in the NFL that really intrigues you going into this season where you sit back and say, maybe you're not crazy about what they did, thus they intrigue you. Or maybe you really like what they did, thus they intrigue you. Who falls into that category?
Well, I think I have to stay in the division and go with the Giants because, man, I do not know what the New York Giants are doing up there. I think they've had a wacky offseason, to say the least. I mean, you get rid of Odell Beckham, but you're not quite totally rebuilding because you're still paying Eli Manning over $25 million this year. And, you know, you draft Daniel Jones high in the draft, so you get his replacement. But then, you know, you make some other trades and moves that kind of just – and you sign Golden Tate in free agency, you spend big money on a 30-plus-year-old wide receiver – really only a slot receiver. It's just kind of, it seems like there's not like a real plan in New York. It seems like they're trying to both win now and kind of rebuild at the same time. And right. I just don't really get their plan. And I don't even know if there is a plan.
Did you like what Dave Gettleman did when he was at Carolina?
Not, I mean, ultimately, no. I mean, I think you look at, you know, how he handled the Josh Norman thing. Ultimately, and he let a talented player walk for nothing. And I think you saw how when he left there, a lot of players did not have complimentary things to say about him. So I think they had some success early on, but ultimately it kind of didn't really age well.
It's because I had to ask that question because obviously with the Giants so far, it's been a mystery map. I don't know what they're doing. If Daniel Jones were 17 and not 6, would you feel better about that pick? Or is it the placement that's the problem, or is it the player that's the problem?
I would say it's the player more than the placement. I mean, if they think he's a franchise quarterback, I feel like they have to take him at 6. I mean, you don't want to risk losing that guy, even if you know you might be able to get him later. Because if you really believe in him and he's your guy, I feel like you have to get him. Now, I just feel like based on what Daniel Jones showed us at Duke, I don't really see the pedigree and the reputation there that points to him being a top 6 pick and really a surefire option to replace Eli Manning. I have serious questions about his capabilities as a player. And I don't love his profile. So I think that's kind of a really big risk for them to take.
And there's another part, too. Carson Wentz, of course, won national championships at North Dakota State. The only quarterback in this century that has had success that had an under 500 record in college is actually Goff. And it's a one-year success. He's the only one. Normally, having an above 500 record is actually part of the prerequisite, as far as I'm concerned. Jones did not at Duke.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of things with him statistically, too, that just don't point to really being successful in the league. You kind of touched on it there. I think it's easy to say you can look at a quarterback in college and maybe they don't have the best supporting system around them. But historically, the numbers bear out that those quarterbacks who are in those situations, even if it's not necessarily all their fault, that you don't see them get to the NFL and put into a good situation and suddenly everything is thriving. It's really not the rule. It would be more of the exception, and that's what I think the Giants are kind of betting on there. They're kind of betting on the exception with Daniel Jones more than they are the rule.
It is great to have you back on. Thanks so much for giving us the time today. I really appreciate it, Brandon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Brandon Leegout joining us from BleedingGreenNation.com. We'll come back more in a moment. Dick Girardi next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you. Great to have you with us, Dick Girardi. Next half hour on the Belmont Stakes. 10-horse field, absolutely wide open. And Dick will talk about that in the next half hour. The Phillies are back in action tonight. And the they're in first place. The Keuchel deal's been made by Atlanta. Cubs, by the way, lead the Cardinals 3-0, top of the sixth. Pirates are at Milwaukee tonight. Yankees at Cleveland. Let's see here. Red Sox home with Tampa Bay at Fenway. And the Phillies have the Reds tonight. And that will be a 6:30 airtime tonight. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Zach Eflin goes tonight for the Phils, and Tyler Mahle will be on the mound for the Cincinnati Reds. And the Reds right now are 28-33. Actually, not bad. They're only in last place, but they're six games back. Phillies have a two-game lead in Atlanta, five on the Mets, seven on the Nationals, and the Marlins are also in the division. We'll leave it at that. But Eflin will go tonight. Fewer hits than innings pitch, good. And Eflin's strikeout-to-walk ratio is outstanding. It is almost 4-1. But if there's a negative, is that he's given up 10 home runs this year. So Zach Eflin will go tonight. Hoskins is at 13 home runs. Gene Segura's hitting 292, and Bryce Harper's driven in 44 runs. For your fighting Phils. And again, that's a 6:30 airtime tonight. 7:05 first pitch. Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson tonight at Citizens Bank Park. This is a series with the Reds. The Reds are in town. You got to think minimum 2 out of 3. And the key now for the Phillies, they're in a position where just start winning every series. Just win the series.
Yeah, they haven't played any divisional opponents in well over a month. They'll get the Diamondbacks early next week, and then they'll jump back into divisional play. Then they'll play the other three, then to round out June.
Absolutely. All right, Dick Girardi next half hour on the Belmont Stakes. 10-horse field. The Preakness winner War of Will is in it. Nobody even knows who the Kentucky Derby winner was. It is Country House, not in it. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's going to be rain-free all weekend, so stock up.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.